Hey everyone, welcome to But Why the Podcast, the podcast where we talk about the things in pop culture that people say matter and ask the question, but why though? Before we get started, we wanted to make sure that you take a minute to rate, review, and subscribe us on iTunes or wherever you listen. It's the easiest way for people to find us and it helps us hear your feedback. Beyond that, come and join our conversation on Twitter at ButWhyThoughPC and on Facebook, facebook.com/ButWhyThoughPC. And if you like what you're doing and you want to support us a little more, head on over to Patreon, patreon.com/ButWhyThoughPC. And if a monthly subscription is too much for you, make sure you check out our t-shirts. We have t-shirts open on TeePublic and available for purchase on our website through the merch tab, ButWhyThoughPodcast.com. Enjoy the show. Everyone, welcome back, and today we are talking about the latest in the MCU, Black Panther. As always, I'm your host, Kate, and I'm here with Adrian.
Hey, how's it going?
Matt.
Hello.
And our special guest is back, Ritz, the Black Panther expert.
What's going on?
So, we're happy to have you, Ritz. Happy to have your knowledge and love of the character here. So, first things first, Black Panther, as of today, blew past anybody's estimation for movie numbers. According to Box Office Mojo, it's made $235 million domestic, $169 foreign, and it still hasn't come out in China, by the way. And so its worldwide gross for 4 days is $404 million.
Hold on. What was that first number?
Huh?
What was that first number?
$235 million.
The okay.
Why?
I thought it was lower earlier.
Oh. But yeah, so the movie came out on February 16th, technically the 15th, because you can watch a movie at 6 p.m. on a Thursday now. And
I believe we should have a podcast on how they're diminishing all of that stuff.
I'd be down for that.
Okay.
And it's now February 19th. So 4 days. At about $100 million a day, 4 days, and it's killing it. I don't know what you guys think. I know on our Black Panther episode, we kind of talked about it hitting that billion mark. Where do y'all fall now?
I said this like on January 6th, this was going to hit a billion. Why would I change my mind now?
He's like, I know.
When we were talking billion, I thought we were talking about like if it would break like a million domestically. Which yeah, it might break a million domestically. Like it's going to break a million, like total gross, like easy. A billion. It's going to break a billion, like worldwide easy. I wasn't worried about that. I thought we were talking about if it was going to do it domestically, like and be, you know, Star Wars level, big. It might, I don't know. We'll see.
What are your thoughts, Ritz?
Domestically, I don't know if it will, you know, when it's all said and done. I know for sure worldwide, yeah, that's definitely in the bag. Like, I said before, it would be second to Avengers, but I think it could possibly surpass it. So, yeah, those numbers are crazy.
Yeah, I mean, and with those numbers, it's the largest debut for any movie that's not in the summer or the holidays. Mm-hmm. And just tanks. I think Deadpool held the number one spot for a February movie ever. And this just kind of, I think that was $169 million for Deadpool. And this just walked right over that hurdle. Like, I kind of don't know what else to say. Cause like these numbers are really phenomenal. I mean, I don't want to say surprising at all because I mean, Disney knew what it had. It marketed it extremely well and people were excited. And one of the reasons people were excited is cause like this marks a turn in pop culture, I believe, for a lot of people in that it's a predominantly Black film with Black creatives behind it. And for me personally, I hope that this kind of, if you follow me on Twitter, I say this all the time, like I hope that this success has proven that we can get, you know, we can get Latinx superheroes now, you know, like you can bet on this and it's going to work. So it's definitely a new age. But I mean, I think too, like it's great to see such a historical character from Marvel finally get his solo movie as well.
Right.
What do you think, Gritz?
I think in general, so the numbers show the anticipation was already hype. I mean, this is just seeing trailers. This is before anybody's seen the movie. It was already breaking pre-sale records. You know what I mean? So when the movie came out, there's already a bunch of people that said, yo, I'm going to like the movie regardless because it's Black Panther and, they're doing things that they haven't done before. So when the movie came out and it was nigh flawless, I mean, we're going to talk about this more, almost flawless, then it was like, whoa, not only was it, like everybody, I have not heard one person who said that didn't exceed my expectations. Everybody has said that. So that means that they were anticipating it. They probably were going to see it a couple of times anyway. So those couple of tickets they got already, they probably went back and got more just based on the fact that it's so good. And because the reviews are almost all positive, save for the people that are actually like, legitimately don't have like some of the only negative review I've heard. I've heard two negative reviews. One of them was incoherent and badly written with grammar mistakes all through it. And the other one was hitting on some really, they were saying some really anti-Black things. Let's just put it that way. So those are the only two reviews that I've seen bad about it. So when people are seeing, like, everybody saying, yo, this movie's great, this movie's great, this movie's great, that's getting more people to want to go see it. So this is just the weekend. So the hardcore people, and then a lot of Black people, obviously, went and saw it over the weekend. You know, not just Black people, everybody, you know. But then there's going to be the more casual people who are throughout the week, well, man, these people said it was good. Maybe I'll go see it. You know, people who don't even care about comics or people who don't care about Black Panther or people who were thinking about it and now they're convinced. You know what I mean? So these numbers are going to go crazy.
Yeah, and I think too, like just going off of that, it does have the highest comic book rating of, or comic book movie rating of anything on Rotten Tomatoes. It's sitting at a 97 right now.
Yeah. I would be careful not to, what was Wonder Woman? Wonder Woman came out. Like, is Rotten Tomatoes really that? I don't think that should be our standard for whether the movie's good or not.
This is true, especially Wonder Woman at first weekend.
Yeah.
I mean, after analyzing the movies, though, Wonder Woman has far more flaws than this. Far, far more.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying, like, I don't think we should, like, jump the gun and say, like, yeah, it was great because it's 98%, because that's what people did with Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
And now here we are. I don't want that to happen to Black Panther.
Accurate.
Yeah, man, didn't Thor Ragnarok open up to 97, too?
I don't remember. I think it was in the 90s. Was it 96?
It was, I don't know what it opened up to.
Thor was also very good, but it had more flaws. You know, I don't know. I think it's a matter of, you know, when you look at a movie and if a movie is generally good, you kind of walk away with it like, wow, that was amazing. And then It takes a while to settle and kind of like really think about the things that may have gone wrong with it or could have been better. And it took me several days for Black Panther for me to point out just a couple of really nitpicky things, to be honest, for me to be like, oh, that could have been, but like, really nitpicky.
I also think, too, it also depends on, like, what you come to these movies for and what you expect to get out of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. True. Because, like, I think Thor Ragnarok was flawless, but it's only because I got exactly what I wanted from it.
Yeah.
That's where I sit.
Same. Yeah. Same.
Yeah. So, but yeah, no, when we'll get into all that. If you've been listening to our podcast and specifically our reviews, you know that I will talk on for an hour just about a regular synopsis. So I'm actually going to throw it to Ritz.
Yeah, so quick overview of the plot. the basics of what it is that Wakanda is to the known in the MCU anyways, known to the world as a third world country, but it's actually secretly the highest technologically advanced country in the world, thanks to a deposit of an alien or cosmic metal called vibranium that these people used, harnessed, learned about, and used it to expand the technology to anything or beyond anything that the rest of the world has seen. So the basics of it is, some people were basically selling vibranium to the wrong folks. That's what you have to say. You get Claw in Ultron. Remember, Ultron had Ultron Prime was made of vibranium. That's why they had such a hard time taking him down near the end of that movie. And you find out, you know, Claw, who's also shows up for the first time in that movie, had stolen some vibranium from Wakanda. So the plot is kind of based around this vibranium and the concept of bad people stealing vibranium and using it for bad things. I'm breaking it down Barney style. bad people using it for bad things, and then good people not using it for good things. That's kind of the dichotomy that they're in the middle here, because, you know, Black Panther and his people, the Panther tribe, they rose to the top and people revere them as the leading tribe of Wakanda because of their choices and how they chose to lead the nation for several generations. So you've basically got people who are thinking beyond this saying, yo, maybe we should like kind of go out and help these other countries or help the world, like use our technology to help people out. And they're being a little reserved, you know, like traditionally reserved, like kind of like, well, you know, if we give people this stuff, what they're going to do with it, you know, people run it, they go crazy with weapons, you know, and we don't want that to go wild. So in the middle of all this plot, you got Killmonger that shows up, that's basically who is actually Wakandan, related to Black Panther's cousin, and he wants to do everything that some people were thinking, but in a much worse way because he's horrible. he's a horrible person, but he's incredibly complex. One of the best, if not the best, MCU villain. So yeah, basically that's the issue. You got him who's coming and trying to take over and do what he wants to with the vibranium, and Black Panther trying to stop him. And at the same time, Black Panther is trying to go back and forth between that issue with, yo, do I use the vibranium to help other people, or do I use it to, or do I keep reserved, like, you know, my past fathers and whatnot. So that's the basics of the plot.
There we go. We're done.
I think that was an amazing summation of that, because I could not have done that.
That's why you're fired from that job.
So, I mean, overall, like, moving out from the plot, I guess we can go into the characters themselves, because this is a movie that is, in my opinion, really strongly character driven. You pretty much know everybody that comes in front of the camera, and you know them well. Like, it's an ensemble movie for the most part, in the fact that, like, I have people come on screen and I care about them when they're on screen.
Right.
Which is really hard to do. I think you've had a couple of movies come out last year that tried to go around that ensemble route, and it didn't really work because they didn't give us enough of the character.
Just say which one it was that did that and then didn't do it well. You can say it.
Justice League.
Yeah, thank you.
So, like, this was definitely a Panther movie, but it was also a movie, in my opinion, around Wakanda and around the people in it and the people who make it what it is and the people who make T'Challa who he is, mm-hmm. Which is probably one of the strongest reasons that there is this complete difference between T'Challa and Killmonger. So, like, going into it, I think we can go ahead and cover, y'all want to cover the Dora Milaje first?
Oh, my God.
Specifically, Okoye, played by Danai Gurira, and she is actually so she's American, but her family is from Zimbabwe. So for her, she's spoken a lot about how being in a position to do this movie was really liberating for her, and you know, made her, she felt connected to the material like she hasn't before, mostly because they made the decision to actually use I'm going to mispronounce this because I watched a whole bunch of videos trying to figure out how to say this right. But it's just not, it's not a sound that like I'm used to making. So it's spelled X-H-O-S-A, but there's a click in the beginning. And that's the name of the, that's, it's like Osa or something like that.
Yeah. You got it. Cause I can't say it either.
Osa? I think that it's like that. I watched a whole bunch of videos. If it's wrong, I know it probably is, but I really tried. And it is, it's an official language of the region of South Africa. It's a language that's used today that people use, and that for Danai specifically, whose character Okoye uses it a lot when they're in situations outside of Wakanda, specifically when they're in the casino scene in South Korea. So Okoye is, probably one of my favorite characters because I see myself in her. She's really steadfast and she doesn't play around, and she doesn't, she, Ryan Coogler explains her as being traditional. She uses a traditional weapon. She doesn't want to be anywhere outside of Wakanda, and she doesn't want to adjust to what outside of Wakanda does. Specifically when after they realize that Claw is trying to sell another piece of vibranium, they travel to Busan in South Korea to try and get him in a sting, and Okoye has to wear a wig, and Ryan Coogler was like, it was the first thing that we knew we wanted to do was we wanted her to throw her wig at somebody, but we didn't know how to do it. And they built a lot of her fight around that to have her throw that part off and to just be, you know, this traditional Dora, a member of the Dora Milaje and the general. So I should probably call her General Okoye specifically.
Yeah, look, I'm getting like chills even thinking about that fight scene in Korea. Oh man.
I mean, what do you guys think about I guess about Okoye and like that fight scene in general, or her fight scenes?
Go for it, man.
I was gonna say, one, I knew the lime green dress or the green dress had to mean something, and I was interested that it did actually mean something the way they dressed, because the way they dressed stood out so much that it had to mean something more than just the way, I don't know, the color of the dress was so, like, I don't know, not really flamboyant would be the word, but just stuck out a lot.
Oh, you're talking about Nakia's dress. Yes. Next to Okoye's red dress. Yeah, because apparently
it was for, that he made it for the country flag.
Yeah, the Pan-African flag. Yeah,
which was, so I didn't recognize the flag colors, but I knew the way the colors were, just because, it's the way that, because if you look around how everybody else is dressed, and especially the way they come in, considering they're supposed to be, like, undercover, she wearing that green dress, especially even the red one, is just so bright and stood out.
That man, I want to just go find Ryan Coogler and just dap him up. Like, like that man is a genius. And there are so many other little, I can't.
So I didn't know it was a flag, but I knew it had to be something. I was like, there has to be some reason for this color, because this just does not match the rest of the scenery.
And, like, if we go to the opposite side, too, because, like, specifically talking about that green dress, so Nakia is the one wearing the green dress.
Right.
And when we talk about her, she's supposed to be the opposite of Okoye.
Right.
Like, she is, like, femininity. She is, she, whereas Okoye won't use guns, Nakia as a spy is going to use whatever she has, and that's it. And so her dress is actually 3D printed. So the fat, so the costume designers 3D printed her dress, and the geometric pattern is actually Wakandan language.
Okay, so I wouldn't have got that one.
Yeah. I watched like 10 videos, like just watching Ryan Coogler like deconstruct scenes, because a crap ton of work went into designing the costumes for this movie.
That's insane.
I know I kind of jumped to the wrong character, but that when you talked about the Korea scene, that was the first thing with them walking up that jumped out to me.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Obviously, because she looked extra fine. Like, come on, Doug.
but this contrast between like Okoye just being down to business and Nakia uses her femininity kind of like in a similar but different way that Black Widow does. I think it's just a spy thing, because if you look at how they dressed, other than that scene, Okoye is constantly in her full armor, and Nakia is in more, you know, more loose clothes. Well, I guess. Well, like
Okoye is a soldier. Nakia is a. It's like she's in civilian clothes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
So,
and she's in hers. Her
like,
clothes.
She's a general. Like, I'm thinking, even thinking about like traditionalist or just regular army and stuff like that. You know, even if you say you're a CIA operative and whatnot, you know, you're going to wear different kinds of suits every day. You know what I'm saying? But if you're a general in the army, you're always wearing your ACUs I'm sorry, they got multicam now. So, but they're always wearing their military outfit.
Yeah,
uniform.
Yeah. But no, I just wanted to highlight it, because like watching, I think it was for Vanity Fair, and he was saying that he wanted Nakia really feminine, and so that's why her shoulders are always showing. She has cutouts in her dress, like that he wanted her to be extremely feminine, and like in the Korea scene, she uses her heel to beat somebody up, which is her using her femininity to her advantage.
Oh, Chuck.
What did you think, Adrian?
Okoye is dope. the actress is awesome. Obviously, like, we know, like, we know when she's going to be in there, you know she's going to be dope because you've seen her, you know, for years and years and years in The Walking Dead. So you know that she can pull off, like, that kind of character really well. She plays the character super well. I think, like, down to do I like her character choices? I mean, that's, like, a different story. Like, I think she's a little bit too proud. Like, if Stefani would kill me instead of my significant other, would, like, kill me and, like, to stay with, like, America, I don't know how I feel about that. I don't know how I feel about that. But her character's dope. She's badass, and I'm all about it.
I actually really loved that she was like, "Nah, Wakabi, you screwed over our country. I'll totally kill you." I really liked that.
That's not what she said, though. She says she chooses Wakanda over her, which means in any situation that comes up, it doesn't have to be him betraying. It could be like, you know, this dude's about to get exiled. Will you come with me? Like, nah, Wakanda, bro. I don't know
how I feel about that. The lines were from Wakabe. When he said, "You'll kill me, my love." And then she said, "For Wakanda, without question." So powerful.
I mean, to her credit, though, she also refuses to escape with Ramonda and Nakia.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah. So, yeah. I was going to mention that, too. Like, she's super proud. And, like, that's part of her character. You know, it's dope. Yeah. She pulls it off super well, and I believe it. You know.
Oh yeah. I should mention Nakia is played by Lupita Nyong'o, who we know from, she's in our Star Wars universe. Mm-hmm. Come on. And she's just been like, seeing her in that and having like such choreographed fights and doing so well made me really happy. And she is also she was born in Mexico, but she and her family are Kenyan. So she has also deep roots to Africa. And this movie, like, I just read so many interviews with all these actors, and they were just like so happy.
You know where I saw Maz Kanata at in this movie?
Where?
But she was talking to the Korean lady outside the door.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Yeah.
I was like, I like that.
Beyond that, they do have a chase scene accompanying T'Challa, but mostly on their own, taking care of business by themselves, or attempting to before their seat until their car gets blown up. But I think it gave me probably one of my favorite scenes in a Marvel movie ever, where Okoye throws her spear out the window and it lands in front of that car, and the car just like smashes into it because it's vibranium.
No. I'm gonna go see this movie again tomorrow because of y'all.
Like that, yeah.
Ah, that was so incredible. Look, okay, hold on. So real quick on Nakia and Okoye. All right. Now, these are probably the two most well-known Dora Milaje aside from the newer run where Io and Anika are. Io was in the Civil War movie. She's the one that was about to whoop up on Black Widow. She was also in this movie too, but just not as prevalent. But yeah, so Nakia and Okoye are the Dora Milaje that hang out with Black Panther during Volume 3. As you guys, I think we talked about last time, the Dora Milaje are also known as the Adored Ones. They're ceremonial wives to the Black Panther in the comics. Not in the movie. They changed that in the movie, which was, I think, a good choice. and they're younger in the comics. So some things that they changed about Nakia, I think, is cool. In the comics, Nakia, Black Panther accidentally kisses her. Long story, but he kisses her unintentionally, and she falls head over heels for him and goes a little crazy. And the movie, they upgrade her and they say, okay, no, she's older. She's a genuine love interest. It's not like a crazed thing. And she has her own thing going on. You know what I mean? You got Okoye, who, like, after Nakia left and everything, Okoye stuck with Black Panther throughout the whole series, and he was like, she was like the number one, like, badass that you see, like, in the movie. All right, so what they did was they switched Anika. She was the leader of the general, and they replaced her with she was the general, like, kind of like the general of the Dora Milaje, and they switched her with Okoye, and they made her the general role. So because she's kind of like the one that was the most loyal throughout Volume 3. So matter of fact, she's probably the most loyal named Dora Milaje, period, in the comics. So you think about it, because the other ones, Anika and Io, they they were the ones that broke off from Wakanda. They broke off and like started their own thing, and they had the no one man thing going on, and then they messed up M'Baku. So Okoye ascending to this role in the movie is perfect for her. Her tradition and her loyalty is perfect. The fact that everything is for Wakanda is perfect, and it's almost to a fault, but she is watching. As soon as she found a moment where something didn't line up with tradition, she snapped back because she was just waiting for that moment. So when T'Challa showed back up later, I'm fast forwarding a little bit. When he showed up back later, he was still alive and he hadn't yielded and he hadn't been killed. Technically, the challenge was still on. So when N'Jedaka or Killmonger said, you know, he was like, nah, all that challenge stuff is over with. Like, that was Okoye's, she was like, oh, so you're just gonna turn your back on tradition. All right, I got you. And then she called all the Dora Milaje to arms. That's what she was waiting on, because she knows in her heart what's right and what's wrong. And she's loyal to the throne and she's gonna follow tradition, but her heart is still in the right place. She was looking for the moment, you know? So, I mean, I think they did her character excellently. And also, I don't think that any of the Avengers, save for Scarlet or Scarlet Witch or Vision, can handle her. Just don't. Have
what? I love her, but I wouldn't go that far.
We can talk about this.
She's getting blasted in the face by Iron Man 10 out of 10 times.
Okay. you have to remember what kind of technology they have.
She's getting her head smashed by Thor.
10 Actually, no. I think
she's getting ripped in half by Hulk.
The only person Hulk, the Avengers, except for Black Widow.
I mean, there's some heavy hitters in the Avengers.
The Hulk is the Hulk though. He's like fighting them half of the time.
And this is where he starts retconning. Is Hulk really an Avenger?
Right. No, you make good points, though.
My boy Peter Parker? Oh, come on, man.
No, actually, MCU Peter, we actually talked about this on my podcast we recorded before. Peter actually would have trouble because of his inexperience.
Yeah. So,
this is if Peter Parker would get ripped in half.
Exactly. Thank you. She would break him over her knee.
His strength is way superior over hers, but he just doesn't have the experience. He's an idiot.
I'm just saying, they all get smacked by Thanos anyway, so does it really matter?
And plus, with her authority, like, come on, he's a kid. With her authority, she's probably gonna just talk to him with a commanding tone, and he'll go sit down.
Go to your room, Peter.
He's probably African, and he's like, I don't know what you just said, but I'm gonna do that.
He's gonna go hide behind Iron Man,
right?
So moving to the other side of the coin with Nakia, because Nakia actually, like, she is mostly her heart first, which make her prioritize everything else before Wakanda. Like, she's a spy, she's in the field, she wants to be out there helping, and she has this exchange with T'Challa where she's telling him that, like, after what I've seen, I have to be out there to help him, you know, and help them. And he tells him, we need to help them, you know, we can educate them, we can give them technology. And, you know, she goes down the path of, you know, start in the very beginning telling T'Challa, like, we need to think about moving out before, you know, Killmonger comes in with a very different idea. Well, same but different idea. So for Nakia, it's all about heart first. But that heart still leads her in a strong duty. And for Nakia, I was super happy when Ramonda told her to take the herb. I don't know how to work that in, because that's like too far ahead.
I mean, I think it's a good place. I mean, I didn't know that was a thing. I thought 10 out of 10 that was going to happen after the podcast episode. I didn't know that she would be a person who could take the herb or whatever. So I thought that was what they're going to do until, you know, they found a way to bring, tell T'Challa back. I thought that she was definitely going to do that. I kind of wish they would. I thought that would have been kind of dope, to be honest.
Same.
Okay, so so with this herb, only somebody within all complete bloodline or half a bloodline?
In comics.
It's different in the movie. It looks like anybody in the movie could take it.
Okay, that's what threw me off with the whole thing in the movie. I didn't understand that. They were just handing that thing out. And I was like, I already said an episode.
You get an herb.
See, everybody in the, so one thing I like about the movie so much, or the way they portray Wakanda so much, is that everybody has a level of respect for tradition, except for Killmonger. He's just like not him. But I mean, everybody in Wakanda has a certain level of respect for tradition in Wakanda, like certain traditional values. So even M'Baku, I don't even think that he would try to like go steal the herb or anything like that. I think that if he wanted the herb, he would do it the right way, like go through the challenge and all that and stuff like that. You know what I mean? Like, I think these people have a certain level of honor among them that would keep them from like going and raiding the garden or whatever like that. I mean, it might be a cool mini story plot line about some random person that went down to the garden and ate an herb or something like that. But like by and large, I think most people would respect the values, you know?
Yeah, which I think, I mean, since we've talked about M'Baku, I think we can just go straight into him, because since he's a side character, but like, in my opinion, he kind of stole the show when he was on screen.
That man.
A lot of the time.
I can't believe how good they did M'Baku. This movie was amazing, man. I'm telling you.
No, yeah, he's my favorite character. When he goes and then he just starts barking. Oh, man, I died inside. Oh, I loved it. Oh, I love it.
Hold on. Who were the white gorillas? Like, think about college. All right. Think about college fraternities. Tell me who the white gorillas were. Come on. I know y'all know. They're like the Qs. They're like the Qs, man. The Qs come out stumping in the purple, you know, with their purple joints on and the gold boots, and they're all barking and stuff like that. I mean, that's what
it's reminded me of. This is amazing. I love it. The vegetarian joke was hilarious.
Do you want to put it in some context, Adrian? Like, explain the scene a little bit?
Oh, well, I guess after the scene that you're talking about where they were, you know, they offered the herb to, was it Nakia? I don't know how to say it. Yeah, I was just thinking Lupita. I love Lupita so much. So that's how I was going to say the name. They go to, this is after Killmonger has taken over. So they go back to, M'Baku, is that how you pronounce it?
M'Baku,
to enlist his help in fighting Killmonger, because their tribe is separate from kind of like the main Black Panther tribe that we've seen through the movie. And they go in there and try to talk to him, but he's like not having any of it. And Martin Freeman's character, Agent Ross, tries to talk, and he's like, "No, stop talking." And then he starts doing the. And then everyone else around him starts doing it, and he just shuts up. You also gotta like love Martin Freeman's face, because he's like, "Are you serious? This is really what we're doing. This is really what we're doing." Like, you know, like he wants to say one more thing, but then he's like, "If you speak again, like, I'm gonna feed you to my children." He's like, "No, I'm just vegetarians," and I'm just lost.
That's
the best line of the whole movie.
The best thing too is that he laughs at himself so hard that he snorts.
Yeah. But you can tell, like, I felt like such like a genuine moment while they were filming it, and they're like, "No, just keep it in. Keep it in." Yeah. You know, Kruger was like, "No, we need that one. That's the one we want."
And M'Baku is played by Winston Duke, and he is actually he has ties to Trinidad and Tobago himself. Oh my god, I will say this, Twitter is calling him M'Baku because there's a lot of thirst for him right now.
I did not know that thirst was that real until like after the movie. I was like, whoa.
I don't think anybody had seen him until that movie, and then he's just chilling on that throne. A powerful scene.
I know we got the wettest cut with the vibranium clippers, but you know.
I mean, pretty much what everybody already said.
Matt felt like Ross.
No, you're such a Jewish part, right? Because, like, he could have easily just, you know, taken them out, but he took them to T'Challa and didn't, you know, kill him after, like, they found him, like, in the snow. So,
yeah.
That's what I mean by the honor and respect.
Yeah. No, you're totally right on that point.
Because to put into context, M'Baku is the very first ritual challenge that T'Challa goes through, attempting to actually take the Panther throne. But T'Challa beats him. And he loses and he goes back and he has every motive to take the herb. And he doesn't.
Well, he still owed him.
Yeah. Do you want to explain?
Well, you're like over here like, yeah. Oh
my gosh. No, it's like that's your point though. Like he has every right or like every like motive to take the herb and you think like, oh well he's gonna do it because he might be like a bad guy. But like, no, he's still part, you know, even though they're separated, he's still part of like the greater tribe and he's still because down with the tradition. Comics,
he is a bad guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, see, I didn't know that. I thought he was pretty.
Yeah.
I know that. Well, I looked it up and like his like name was like Man Ape, and he just like was in like this big gorilla suit. I kind of want to see that on screen a little bit. Like, I hope like if he's in Infinity War, that's why I want him to come out like just in the big
like a big gorilla
suit. Try and go punch Thanos in the face. I want that so bad. I'm a fidget to my children, Thanos, and just try to punch him in the face.
He's a bad guy. He's a relatable, complex bad guy. He's not as well portrayed in the comics, but he's pissed about like the way T'Challa runs things. You know, he doesn't like the way he runs things, and it's not that he wants to like take over and do bad things. He just doesn't like T'Challa, so it makes him automatically like his antagonist. You know, for things that happened in the past that I won't go into like super great detail into, but yeah, he's a bad guy, but he's not like a bad.
He's not a bad guy.
You know what I mean? I mean, he does some bad things. I mean, yeah, he in the comics he does some like some betrayal and stuff like that. But you know, I think the movie took that and they made him a little bit more honorable. So I really enjoyed that.
I also like, honestly, how they didn't use the name Manape, which is terrible.
Yeah.
It shouldn't have been a thing. But how they use like some of that imagery from the comics when he starts the ritual combat in the ape mask. And when they go up, you see like, and it looks like it's pulled out from the comics, how it's shown. So like the mask and then the, I guess like the chiseling in their like mountain, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
So it like still honors his origins without keeping some of the other aspects of it, which is really hard to do with characters, and it was really well done.
Yeah.
So we
sign out before we move on. If they ever do an Overwatch movie, I hope he plays Winston.
Don't say that.
Because his name is actually Winston. And I feel like it just works.
Winston has a white gorilla skin.
Okay, if they do like an animated thing and they can't get the original voice actor, I want him to be the voice actor then. So then.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, gosh. So I think next we should just go into Ross, since you mentioned him getting barked at. Which was an amazing moment. So for Ross, he comes in during the sting operation in Busan, because he, a member of the CIA, and his CIA team are there to buy vibranium from Claw, which I don't think they ever say if they were really gonna buy it or if they were gonna take him in. Like, I don't really know if they took him in because T'Challa was there or if he was just gonna buy it. Like, I'm a little iffy on that.
I think it was a setup. It was like one of those government setup things. Like,
okay,
you know, Claw was going to sell his stuff to, you know, some sellers for some diamonds or whatever.
Yeah.
The government caught wind of it. They set up their, you know, they staged their buying offer or whatever with some diamond. They have, you know, they get the diamonds or whatever. They staged their buying offer. Claw had the dual effect of knowing that it was gonna draw out the Wakandans, and then at the same time, Claw also knew that, you know, the government was gonna be involved too. So they were prepared for all of this. I think they were doing it all to get the diamonds and draw out T'Challa and him, and you know, for Killmonger to get a glimpse of him, because I think Killmonger wanted to get a glimpse of T'Challa before he actually went over to Wakanda. Something like that. But I think all the parties knew, all the parties were too smart for the situation. Like, Black Panther knew what was a setup. You know what I'm saying? Everett knew Ross was going to show up there. Everett knew Claw was going to show up there. Claw knew that Everett was a, you know, was really government. You know what I mean? Like, they all knew the game. So it was very evident in that scene.
So I guess I just want to mention it here because they're talking about that scene. And I just want to know what Andy Serkis's SoundCloud link is so I can get his mixtape.
He's going to be singing Baby Don't Hurt Me. What is love?
Yeah, I saw something like on Reddit, like a comment was like, Marvel wants, or Disney wants to spend a lot of money making Andy Serkis look like Andy Serkis in CGI. So he does the CGI stuff, but I forgot how like good Andy Serkis is. Like, he needs to not be in CGI so much.
He does. He's amazing. Because
I thought he stole the scenes that he was in just by the virtue of just how good he is.
It was great. He's, hey, come here. You can go.
Yeah, it was great. He picked up right where he left off, like from Age of Ultron, basically, like just being the better villain.
Yep.
And I kind of took his craving for vibranium to be the thing that drove him as crazy as he was in that movie.
So did he have like vibranium like poison per se?
No, I don't think so.
Well, what was on his neck?
Oh.
Maybe he did have vibranium poison. I don't know.
Because he had like the color, because the vibranium always glowed like a bluish purple or like an indigo color, and it ran through his veins all throughout his neck and kind of his back area.
That's true. Huh. Maybe he did have vibranium
poison. That's a good catch.
He was snorting that vibranium.
Well, I didn't know if it was because he had it attached to his arm for the gun. And after a while, the exposure.
Yeah, actually, maybe that's why. I didn't think about that. Wow. I didn't think about that even once. Yeah.
Okay, well, that was what I had for him. Apparently nobody knew the answer.
I mean, no, I think it was the gun. I mean, that makes sense. That makes perfect sense.
That, and I mean, Ryan Coogler worked in costuming to represent the Pan-African flag. I'm pretty sure he wanted it to be vibranium poisoning.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I literally thought it was, but I hadn't seen anybody else
They didn't
say
really
that.
Talk about it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's what it looked like, why he was insane or doing everything, because it looked like, but yeah.
Yeah.
True that.
No, definitely. Which I also think, oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead.
I was going to say, I also think, too, like, Andy Serkis's, like, being used to acting in CG where he has to overact for himself to come through works so perfectly in real life as Claw.
Yeah. I think you can even see his insanity for the vibranium, even for that split second when he cracks when Ross is in the room talking to him.
Yeah.
And he asks how he says, I thought you stole their vibranium. And he kind of lurches at him and he's like, I only took a piece of it. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. They've been mining the mountain for 1,000 years and haven't scratched the surface. You know, it was like, he was like, you could see it in his eyes. Like he was wanting it.
And then, so Ross, while they have, Claw detained after the vibranium deal goes on, he actually takes a bullet for, is it Nakia? Is that who he takes the bullet for? Right?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. He takes a bullet for her in his back, which leaves him paralyzed and pretty much about to die. So they make the decision to take him back to Wakanda in order to get the life-saving treatment. And this is where we kind of get to see Shuri.
Oh, the best for last.
Shuriness.
Which also leads to probably the first mini disappointment from this movie.
Which is?
When Ross wakes up, I was hoping he was going to say something like he was Bilbo. Like, I'm lost. I'm on an adventure. Where am I?
Oh, that would have been epic.
That would have been the meta shit ever, and I would have loved it.
I was wanted one little line of something to this, a hint at this. Like, oh, I've been on an adventure before in a long lost land.
I would have loved it.
Because, I mean, when you think about it, Ross, like, Martin Freeman is Bilboing a lot of the time that he's in Wakanda.
Yeah.
Looking around, Oh, so
he even tells like Shuri, he's like, the magic? Not magic. Science.
Don't scam me like that, colonizer.
I had a ring once.
Yeah.
I had a ring once.
Yeah, that would have been perfect. Perfect. Yeah, if he woke up without his clothes, he's like, where's my ring at? Oh, that would have been so good. That would have been so good.
Oh, man. Oh,
that would have been perfect. You also get, like, my favorite line, which alludes to Bucky, where she says, oh, you brought me another broken white boy to fix. Shuri's snark here is just, like, untouchable.
The thing is, it's so natural because she's not even trying to be like that. It's just her. That's the funny thing. She's just, like, being her, you know?
Can I make a confession?
Yes.
I hated the what are those line.
The what are those line.
Oh, man. If that was like 2 years ago, I think that would have worked better for me, but I rolled my eyes so hard. Showing him the sneakers?
Oh, yeah.
Like, what are those? I was like, oh, my God, what year is it?
I loved it.
I feel like the joke was funnier. Like, I feel like it was funny like when Kruger wrote it like 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Right here, or what are those joke? But like, we're so far away from that.
I loved it because I wasn't expecting it. Like, it just came out of nowhere. I was like, whoa.
The sneakers line did kill me, though. That was really, really good.
Like, oh, the sneakers, she, because the. Okay.
she pulled it off so good.
Shuri is played by Letitia Wright, and she is from Guyana, or she and her family are from Guyana. And she is a phenomenal actress, and I watched some of her interviews, and she said that the majority of the lines that she has with T'Challa where she's picking on him, most of that was ad-lib, because she was like, I'm just going to try to be a sister here, and I'm going to try to annoy him like a sister would annoy him.
But putting your hand up if there's any more challengers?
Yeah.
Oh, that was
the first.
And that was the fight. Really quick comic reference. Really quick.
Exactly.
She actually did want to go fight T'Challa at the beginning of Black Panther Volume 4, and she was trying to get into the ring to fight him. So when she rolls her hand, I was wondering for a split second, like, wait a second. But no, so in the movie, it was alluding to her, you know, being a snarky little kid who, you know, works on technology. But it was also the reference to the, I like how they like snuck that in there. It was like a comic reference too, to the fact that she had always been wanting to challenge T'Challa. For you know, to prove herself.
That's dope. I like that Easter egg, but doesn't drive a plot. I'm all about that.
And I think too. So like, oh wait. It's like as we move into Shuri, it is like very apparent that she's like the technological backbone of Wakanda. She's making all the tech. She's testing it out, and you get to see her create and. Her like one of my favorite interactions with them is where she has T'Challa test the new Black Panther suit because it holds kinetic energy, and she tells him to kick it, and then he kicks it flies across the room, and then she's like, oh no, you're breaking my stuff. And then she puts it back up. She's like, okay, now kick it again. Wait, and she takes her what do they call kimono beads?
Yeah, kimono beads. Yeah.
Yeah, kimono beads, and she pulls it up. And she's taking a video of it, and he kicks it, and he flies backwards, like the entire thing has like this little mini ball of energy come out.
Delete that footage.
Yeah, and it made me so happy, just because like
it was such a great display of her, like her technological prowess and their relationship as brother and sister.
Yeah, because like this is one of the things like I felt when I first felt her doing those like. Like comic-y lines, kind of like I felt the same with M'Baku at first. Like, oh god, are they going to go too far? But M'Baku was perfect, and for me, I felt like Shuri was perfect too because the way she was interacting was genuine to a like you know a sister brother relationship. Mm-hmm. And so I really liked it. I didn't feel like they took that you know to that to the top part. You know, they didn't go overboard with it.
I do find it interesting and like that basically the science for the brains of the entire, country, everything is probably the one person that is the least traditional.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Definitely.
It works perfectly. Yeah.
So science always from tradition.
Yes. You can say it louder. You say it louder. Say it
with the chest, Matt.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it was because she doesn't wear traditional clothes. She doesn't like she has like house Wakandan music playing in the background every time you go in. Mm-hmm. Which the music in this movie was so good. Like it felt different than everything else, you know? It had its own flair, its own like it was Wakandan music over anything else.
In the opening scene when they're flying over the field and they have old boy, whoever that is, that singer singing that song in whatever language that was, whatever that was, that opening scene, and you see me singing that was awesome. It just the whole feel of that, and then they rolled so quick, like after the first few scenes, they rolled so quickly into the tribal traditional stuff, and then, mm-hmm. and then making the chants and doing the dances and the songs into the challenge, and then. You know, when Killmonger's walking through, he gets his vibe. You know what I'm saying? You hear that, like, that hard bass come in. Like, oh, here comes this American mofo. You know, he's Wakandan, but, you know, he spent all his time in America. Here he comes effing stuff up, you know?
Yeah. So I think, too, like, there's, like, this dynamic between Shuri and Ross to kind of, like, go into where we came from. That is really, really interesting because, like, we're used to seeing Ross because we've saw, you know, in Civil War where he's wanting to dominate like every conversation. He's wanting to like, he's going to call the shots and he's always going to make himself feel like he calls the shots. And then there's like this moment of realizing when he's in the lab with Shuri where he's like, she's going to tell me what to do because I don't know any of this.
Mm-hmm. I was actually kind of surprised by Ross. Like he was asking questions. He knew how the stuff worked. He just didn't think that like people are able to do it. Like, I think we sleep on how smart Ross actually is.
No, that is true. I didn't even think about that.
Because when they were talking about the rail system, and he's like, is this? And she's like, oh, yeah. Then of course that is. And I was like, oh, he actually knows how some of this stuff works. That's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's just like, man, I've never seen it so, like, efficient. Yeah. How is it working that well? I know how it works, but how is it working so good?
Thanks, Ross, for being the guy to – give me the exposition to know what was going on in the scene. Appreciate it.
And it's really cool too, because as we start moving through to the end of the show or to end of the movie, like you get this reuse of this tech that Shuri has in the Busan fight where you throw something on a vehicle and it can be controlled remotely from her lab, from her lair. Mm-hmm. Shuri has a lair.
It's inside of the Great Mound, mind you.
Exactly. And so he actually gets to pilot a Wakandan ship, but she has it set up so that it's American. And she says specifically, it's American, so you can fly it.
Yeah. Oh, that's great.
Which in that final fight, like, lets him help out and not just kind of sit there, which is really awesome to see her, you know, direct him on what to do.
This movie is so excellent, dude. So many layers. This is so many layers.
Yeah, we're not even gonna touch on them all. So should we go into Killmonger or T'Challa first?
How about you hit on Wakabi or Wabi?
Wakabi?
Yes.
Oh yeah. I hate Wakabi. Can that be it? So Wakabi is played by Daniel Kaluuya. You probably know him from Get Out. And he is a British actor whose parents are from Uganda, and he plays one of he's not the chief of another one of the Panther tribe, well, another one of the tribes, but he's like one of the head people in there, and he's friends with T'Challa for a really long time. Is he really
friends with him?
He was friends with T'Challa for a really long time. He raises rhinos, which are so cute. And he essentially just turns on T'Challa because Killmonger shows up with Claw. I don't know if y'all want to talk about this.
I mean, he's definitely, I think, I mean, Daniel's great, like a great actor. Like we all saw Get Out. Like we know how good of an actor is, but I think he's like the weakest part of like this ensemble cast. I don't know if that's because like the ensemble cast is so good and like he's good, but not like good enough, but he was definitely like the most forgettable character out of the ones we see in the movie.
I don't know if he was most,
by design or not.
Yeah, I don't know if he was most forgettable for me, but he was the one that, like, he was most bothersome to me. I did not like this character because he made the least sense for his choices.
Explain.
So basically, he literally, the Killmonger shows up with Claw. He says, "Hey, I brought you a dead guy." He said, "Awesome. I've been looking for this for 30 years. I don't know who T'Challa is. Bye. Whatever. You're now my new king."
Pretty much.
Nah. I think it's a little bit, I think it's a little bit more layered than that. So earlier when they're talking by the Rhino pin, Wakabi mentions to T'Challa, he says, "You know, if you send me and some men out to these different parts of the world, we'll go provide aid or you know, something to that effect."
He says, "We'll go fight."
Yeah. Fight. Not he wasn't providing.
He's not caring about aid.
Right. Well,
yeah, he was against the aid.
Well, yep. I think what he's wanting to do is he wants to go take over different parts because he thinks that Wakanda can control it better. I don't think his heart's in the wrong place as far as like what they just go attack random people like Killmonger. Yeah. I think he generally like when he's talking about fighting, he's talking about fighting like bad people, and he's saying we can go help. Though? I'm pretty sure because if you look at that conversation, T'Challa was partially agreeing with what he was saying, but he was like, "Yo, but you know, we Wakanda, we stay here and we do this thing, and we don't go get involved with the rest of the world." It wasn't that T'Challa was completely against what he was saying; he was just like, "That's not what we do." Because throughout the whole movie, T'Challa has this, he's having a crisis, even from the very beginning scene. Like, there's this very subtle dispute in T'Challa, like when he leaves the convoy. After he saves those people, and he kind of the look when he looks back at them, it's kind of like, I feel like I shouldn't be leaving these people, I should be doing something to help, but I can't because of what we are, what Wakanda does. So with Wakabe is like, "Yo, we'll go fight these other people, and we can the bad people, and we'll go provide." That's why I say provide aid. I meant providing aid, like, to the people who need help against bad people. So, later on when he's like goes to get Claw, and Wakabi's like, "Oh yeah, you can finally bring him back, and we can have justice. Something your father didn't do for 30 years." You know what I'm saying? When he failed at bringing Claw back, Wakabi was starting to distance himself more from T'Challa. So when Killmonger showed up with his ideas, Wakabi was on board because he had already expressed prior that, "Yo, we need to be like going out and doing other things." And he is definitely more militant than some of the other people. Like Nakia wants to go help and stuff too, but she's not militant. Like, "Yo, let's bring war and all this crap."
Yeah, she wants to educate people and give them technology.
Right. And Shuri also wants to help mm-hmm. people. Because at the end of the movie, when you know, she's all happy when he's talking about providing, you know, the tech centers or whatever. But anyways, yeah, it's, I think Wakabe's progression actually made a whole lot of sense, and he misstepped when Killmonger came in, because he was like, "Oh yeah, this dude's trying to make some change, and T'Challa didn't make the change that we wanted to see. Let's go ahead and let's do it." I mean, it was effed up. Don't get me wrong, it was effed up that he did it like that, but. When he does that, and then in the very final scene when he lays down his weapons in front of Okoye, when he looked around for a second, they showed the slow motion fight and everything, he realized, "Yo, I didn't want this to happen like this." So that shows right there that Wakabe wanted what he wanted too much, and he wasn't ready for the cost. You know, so I mean, that's the way I take it.
Like, part of me doesn't feel like that because he has a chance to not fight against T'Challa. He has a chance to honor the fact that he has not yielded or died. And he looks square at him, looks at his men, and makes his men charge in there to attack T'Challa by himself, an army on one person.
Oh, he's
so up. He doesn't all of a sudden, like, for me, I don't like the all of a sudden, "Oh, I made a mistake." It's like, you actually had to think through your mistake because Killmonger didn't order your people. You ordered your people into that fight.
There just seemed like a lot of things like that, that I thought he made a lot of choices.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah. And
it, like, makes it, it wasn't like a one snap, like a split
character
decision.
Choices are his character choices are resolved basically by, like, T'Challa just saying, like, "No, dude, like, Killmonger's the one who saved Claw in the first place." and then you don't have any of like Wakabe's betrayal probably. If
well, that's Kitaro what also bugged that. Me was like nobody a, seemed
to be a choice for me to like overcome like a character's like development throughout the movie.
Mm-hmm. That was probably the second part that I had a problem with. They dropped up Claw from somebody they'd never met, and they didn't question this, even though they just literally got back from a mission in which they failed capturing Claw.
So I think like the only difference here, so when it comes, like the only difference I have with you guys, because I agree with you on like Daniel Kaluuya's, I think Wakabe is probably, he's not written as well, and he's like, he's based off of small decisions, whereas everybody else, you understand their you know, their methods. You understand why they're doing these things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We get more time with the other characters, so they get more time to develop. You know, so the like, decisions mean more.
Exactly. So like, I see his as like, this is like, he is one of the problems I have. Like, and I agree with Adrian and Matt, like it seems rushed in his area because they've been friends all their life, or at least that's what the movie makes it seem like. You shouldn't be able to flip that switch that quickly.
Because mm-hmm. I understand the change part, and I got the change part, but I'm also like, I just don't know. I guess to me, especially with the tradition thing of like the loyalty they show in a lot of this movie, how he flips so fast.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, well, everybody's not as, you know what I'm saying? That's what I'm saying. It just seems like he's his own person. You know what I mean? Like, everybody is not going to be as dedicated is the next person, you know. And I mean, come on, people in real life, some people you think are your friends in real life will turn on you, you know.
Yeah, but I guess like, I just thought because it was like, because like she said, I thought it was like a long withstanding relationship for like I said, I thought they were like friends like throughout the entire like lives, they grew up together, and so like I understand like him arguing with like the elders per se, but then when it came to like that split time, when it came to him and T'Challa, that I was like, I wasn't sure like how you did this so fast.
Because even when they have their meeting where like where he has to say he didn't kill Claw or he didn't capture Claw, like Wakabe looks disappointed, but he doesn't look pissed. Like if they had just done that scene differently and made it be this argument between the two, then I could understand, okay, this bridge has started to burn between him and T'Challa. It makes sense for him to choose Killmonger.
Yeah, I don't have problems with the choices. Like, I agree with what you're saying, Ritz. Like, not everyone's going to be the same. Yeah. And the character is complex and his decisions. I just wish it was portrayed better on screen.
Yeah.
I guess what I mean at the end. Like, because you get, we say all these things about, you know, how they developed, like, Nakia's character. And we get, like, two scenes with him in it. And then we're supposed to be just okay with him, like, turning his back on T'Challa. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm okay with them doing that, but give me a little bit more first.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
But I think too, like for them now, I mean, I think now we can move into to T'Challa himself. Like the reason that I think that they, I guess T'Challa and Killmonger, we can talk about them like next to each other. But like T'Challa himself, I think the reason that nobody brings it up or nobody cares is because the only person that knows that Killmonger was there is T'Challa. And T'Challa just found out that his father murdered his brother and left Eric to just be on his own. And so, like, T'Challa is having, and this is one of the things that differ from the comic, I think, is there's so much compassion that comes out in T'Challa that he's like, you know what? I don't think T'Challa thought he was going to lose. I think T'Challa was sure in himself because he had just defeated M'Baku. Like, you know what? This dude from America came here. My family completely screwed him over. I'll give you a chance at the throne. But I don't think he saw that ending with him getting thrown over a waterfall.
I think T'Challa didn't know he was going to lose, actually. And the reason why is because he was going through a lot with finding out that information from Zuri. So his mental space wasn't in the right place. And when he showed up, it was like the past. He was so consumed with his father, who he saw as a perfect person, who, and they said this in a line earlier, have I ever failed you?
Yeah.
This perfect person who's never failed him, who in his eyes was the end all be all perfect king, who he found a major flaw or a major act that was a flaw. And he just got hit with this. And then here comes this dude. And he knows who he is when he sees him. He knows. That's why he didn't say his name. That's why he didn't ask his name, because he knew. He knew.
Like, exactly.
He knew. So when he was T'Challa was never going to turn down a challenge when he asked for the challenge, because that's just his honor. But he was so conflicted in his mind that he knew that he wasn't up for that fight. That's why he lost. He wasn't mentally ready for it. And then when Zeri got killed, he wasn't, because it was basically his, well, he felt like it was his fault because he accepted the challenge and Zeri came in, because he demanded that Zeri tell him that information too. Like, it was so much weighing on that battle that he lost. Wasn't physical. That was a mental battle that T'Challa lost against what's his face. And Killmonger was a monster. You can't be all mentally messed up fighting him.
I thought he was totally like mentally already like drained and done before he even fought anything. I was totally. But yeah, no, I was like totally agree with Rich. Like, I don't know if his mind was completely in there. He was just like, we're just gonna do this.
Yeah, and that scene was so. Oh my goodness! Like, you know it's gonna happen. You know Killmonger is gonna win. But still, like, every the whole like build up to that scene, it was just wow. Like, the dude coming from America, who are you? Throw him in jail. Yo, what's your name? I'm in Jadaka. You know what I'm saying? And he gives this whole African line, because Michael B. Jordan has never spoken to African before, but he delivered that line like a boss. but he says, yeah. You know, I'm gonna take over the throne. Hey, auntie, you know what I'm saying? Like, he's just like he does all that, you know. And then Shuri saying the line, like, they do so many things to weigh on. And Shuri says, "Oh, you know, he can't beat the challenge. He should have came to the first challenge." You know, and then like all this ends like an hour ago. Y'all were just talking, and now the king's dead. Like, it was so heavy.
No, I mean, I think. I genuinely think that that's why he lost fighting him, because I think that, and this is why I really like Killmonger as a villain, is because he elicits empathy and change from T'Challa, because T'Challa knows that it's Wakanda's fault. It's Wakanda's fault by a byproduct of his father, you know? And so, like, I think that, like, that's definitely why he doesn't show up to this fight.
Everything Killmonger said was right. You know, or I mean, when he's telling them, you know, there's 2 billion people out there that look like us, and y'all ain't helping none of them. Y'all just laid up in here chilling, you know.
Yeah, so. And I agree there too. I mean, part of me just doesn't. I don't know. We'll get into Killmonger as we move through this. To T'Challa, when it comes to fighting, he is. I actually don't think. So T'Challa has the fight in Busan, the two ritual fights, and then the final fight, correct?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And so when T'Challa is thrown off and he falls into the ocean, river, stream thing off a waterfall.
River of grace and wisdom.
Yeah. He's saved by the Jabari. And when they reach him, as you mentioned before, with the heart shape, or to, you know, give him his powers back again, because this time he's gone through two different power draining rituals, and they give him back, they bury him in the snow, and he has this, you know, this meetup with his father, and his father's like, it's time to come home, and he just gives like this strong closing of that door, and like, you know that he's gonna move Wakanda into a different place. After that,
so much emotion in that. Oh my goodness, and so much imagery. Notice when he showed up, his back was turned.
Mm-hmm.
Oh man, I'm telling you, Ryan Coogler is a beast.
Do you have anything? Anything on T'Challa?
I mean, I don't know how y'all feel about this, but I think he's not the best character in his own movie.
Oh, I could agree. Because those Dormilaje were beasts.
Yeah, I mean, I can think of like three other characters like just that I liked in this movie better than I like, you know, T'Challa. I don't know if that's necessarily like a good thing or a bad thing, but you know, I would hope that like the movie that the thing is like named after would kind of be better. But I don't know why I didn't feel the same way. Like I didn't feel the same way about him as I did when I saw Civil War. And I understand what he's going through stuff, but like, I just think he gets a little bit outacted by the other ladies in the movie, and even Mubaku for like the couple scenes that he's in. He's fine. He's not bad. I just don't think he's not the best part of like the movie, which I don't know how I feel about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I just like seeing these black women get their due, man. I'm serious, man. Like, never. I mean, she wouldn't even talk about Ramonda at all, but she was like, she's amazing in her few moments. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, Ramonda is commanding in her scenes.
Uh-huh. It's just like black women. Obviously they have movies and they have, you know, they have parts in movies that are big here and there, but I don't think I've ever seen like an action movie with black women portrayed so flawlessly. And it's not even just the action either. It's like, I mean, Shuri commanding like all of the technology in Wakanda at 16. You know what I mean? Like, there's just so many layers of power. And it's especially obviously Okoye. And I mentioned before with the scene where Wakabe bows before her. It's just so powerful, man. You know?
I do have a question though. I don't know, maybe I missed this in the movie, but does T'Challa have his like 4 degrees already at this point? he didn't seem like super smart like y'all talked him up to be when we did our Black Panther episode, because he kind of did stupid stuff for a lot of the movie.
He's book smart, not common sense. No.
He's not street smart.
Well, Eric has a degree from MIT in Annapolis, so
yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, I thought this dude had like 4 degrees. What?
He did. He has a physics PhD from Oxford.
They made a they did make a small like nod to that to make sure that we didn't forget that he was super smart. When Shuri mentions the suit and he says, you know, she shows him a suit and he goes, "Oh yeah, my design," which means that he designed and built that suit, the one he's wearing in Civil War. And then Shuri's like, "Oh, it's old," you know? So it's kind of like a little nod to, yeah. Like,
oh, okay, gotcha.
Too. But you know, Shuri she's got the reins on that.
Yeah. That I think also to Adrian, he could have his PhD from Oxford, but it could also not mean shit compared to the Wakandans' rules.
Right.
Sure. Yeah. Makes sense, yeah. Like an episode of like a Futurama where Farnsworth goes to like the planet and he's like the stupidest one there. Yeah. I can say that makes sense.
Yeah. yeah. So I mean, now when we move into Killmonger too, like, he has a damn good entrance. So one of my favorite things is I really love his entrance into the movie when he's walking through the museum and asking the lady, like, "What's this? And what's this? And what's this?" And he obviously knows it because he's studied it. And, you know, he corrects her a couple of times and then he just takes it after poisoning her. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she tells him he can't steal. And he's like, "Well, what do you think your people did to get these?"
"Don't worry, I'm going to take it off your hands."
Yeah. And then the fact that he's just like, he's almost like window shopping. Because then he just picks up the Triceratops mask. Is like, "I'm going to take this one for myself." Which, that character design is beautiful. Like, that entire look with the mask and everything.
Mm-hmm. Also a nod to his armor in Volume 4 of the Hudlin Run. He fights him in issue. I can't remember what issue, but I mean, when he shows up with Hudlin Run, he puts that on or something that looks like that.
Yeah.
So just to start, I don't like his hair. I'm sorry.
Hair like, this half fade, half red.
Okay. It reminds me, if you ever seen the goth people on South Park and they're sitting around hopping around with their hair.
Right. I think that might be an African style though too. At the same time,
I mean, it probably is. It's just one of those like I don't mind like everybody else's hair is great. I just do not like his hair at all.
So I didn't and think it was. Me. I didn't think it was an African style, Ritz. I thought that was just him doing that hipster style because that first outfit that he's in is hipster as fuck. He has the little circle glasses, the harem pants. Yeah. Like, come on, that's a hipster style.
Yeah,
that's
it might be African style. I don't know.
Like, that's that short on the sides, long up top look.
Like Future or something.
It seems like I've seen that before in other movies. I mean, I don't know if it is African style or if it just is the hipster style, but I do not like his hair.
Yeah,
and it bugged me.
He's a little hipsterish.
So that's fantastic. I want to get that out
there. He's a hipster serial killer.
Yeah. But, now we can go on to the more important things.
Real quick, as you mentioned, as Kate mentioned, the scene that the opening scene. So yeah. I have to note my one. I have like two small flaws in the movie. First small flaw, the lady that you see at the beginning of the movie, his girlfriend, another black girl who's working at the counter, that's Nightshade. All right, Nightshade is she's kind of obscure, but she's sort of a big Luke Cage villain, kind of. And she shows up in Black Panther's comics a few times. But that's Tilda Johnson. She's a master scientist and chemist. So she poisoned old girl, the white chick. The museum expert.
Oh, that's why she was working at the coffee stand.
Yeah, they set her up at the coffee stand to poison the old girl, which was, I think it was an awesome heist scene, by the way. Like a mini heist scene, but an awesome heist scene because that shows right there, she would have had to apply at the coffee shop at least a month earlier and been working there for a little bit. And, you know, catch on to the lady's schedule. She comes down to get your coffee every morning, get, you know, 7:50 before she goes into work or whatever. You know what I'm saying? To get her mantra down so she can poison her that day. And then she also blocked the cameras with her phone. You know, the phone is such like a camera jamming thing.
Yeah.
So it showed like, you know, some technological prowess there. So that was Nightshade. My problem was that they didn't expand past that because they gave her a nice little intro right there. And then, you know, they pop her in the head like later. And it was just like,
Killmonger does, because he didn't give a fuck about anybody but himself.
Killmonger. And I'm like, it didn't bother me that they killed her. It bothered me that they killed her when they like in the first scene they made her out to be like she was gonna be something.
Yeah.
Like, they killed her, and I was like, that was a little bit. And then it was Nightshade, and they never mentioned that she's Nightshade either. But she's cat, like she's credited as Nightshade. So I'm like, I don't know about that. And my only other issue, as I spoke about before, was why Killmonger exactly was working with Claw. And I came up with a couple of reasons and possibilities why, and how he got to Wakanda.
I feel like this is a Star Wars fan theory going on here.
It's like, because, you know, there's a couple of theories like, okay, maybe he got to Wakanda because he studied his dad's notes and knew how to get there already. But then it's kind of like, well, then why was he working with Claw? So then I was like, okay, maybe he was working with Claw so we can get that first glimpse of T'Challa. Okay, so why did he ask Claw to drop him off in Wakanda then? And then why did he kill him right after? And then how did he still show up in Wakanda if he didn't know? You know what I mean? So it's like, it's kind of a little bit of a smoky area of how he got from that little plane parking lot to Wakanda. Like, okay.
I don't think that prop jet was getting anywhere.
that was my only little, you know, downside, which is still a little bit nitpicky.
I will say this, like, one of the things that I really liked about him is, like, they continually showed him as somebody who grew up in Oakland, but was constantly trying to find his African roots, to the fact that I think he has the only necessary shirtless scene in the MCU. The only one out of everybody.
Is it necessary? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was necessary because when he takes off his shirt, I mean, one, it was because he was good looking, but mostly it's because he's done the scarification ritual that you see on Wakabi's tribe, but what's also used in parts of Africa. Right. And so like, that is him showing that like, yeah, you know what? I've been out here and I've been doing this stuff, but I still know where I came from. Right. Like, I am not different from you all, because if you look at when everybody came to the ritual combat, they had their tribal gear on. And for him, that was him like making that statement, like, I belong here, which I thought was really powerful. And I think that's why he remains like, he doesn't cover it up when he, after he becomes king, you know, he has that open jacket, because that's a reminder that he's killed a whole bunch of people. Yeah. So I thought it was really cool and really nice, like, attention to like, that character design could have been a whole bunch of different things, and like doing it that way, it makes it so important to who he is.
Right. I agree. I think Killmonger's character is a perfect opposition to T'Challa's character, because Killmonger, again, like I said earlier, wasn't exactly wrong with what he wanted to do. Now, how he did it, I wanted to do it was all wrong. Dude is bad. But what he wanted to do was the thing that T'Challa was struggling with the whole movie in his mind. You know, a little bit of push from Maccabi, a little bit of push from Nakia, you know, maybe even Shuri a little bit. But really, when he goes back to the Jalia and talks to his father for the second time, and he says, you know, you were wrong. You were wrong for leaving him there. You were wrong for keeping Wakanda, you know, secret for all this time. You know, you all of you were wrong. And he wasn't just talking to his father. He was talking to the prior Black Panthers too, because they were all there. He was saying, yeah, y'all were wrong for hiding ourselves. So that, like you said earlier, that was his moment of turn. Like, yeah, yo, like we're gonna like I'm gonna wake up. I'm not about to stay here with you guys. I'm gonna wake up. I'm gonna set things right. I gotta go handle Killmonger that you made dead. Your fault. You know what I'm saying? I gotta go handle him and then set things with Wakanda right. You know what I mean? So it was an excellent development. Like Killmonger helped T'Challa's development. And you know,
that's a good villain.
Yeah.
He's a martyr, right? Like he dies. What he wants to get done is going to happen. Like Wakandans are coming out. They're going to be, you know, sharing their technology. At the end of the movie, they go back to Oakland. Like that's exactly where they're going to start doing what they're doing. It might not be the way he wanted, but like his death kind of spearheads. It was like the last push over the edge for T'Challa to be like, all right, we got to go. We got to go do some work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm kind of sad he died. Like, I'd love that Marvel's villains, like in these last movies, have just been spot on. But man, I would love to see them in more than just like a 2-hour movie.
It is his final line.
Yeah, no, I understand that his death is necessary, like for like, you know, for the movie. But man, I want to see him in more stuff. Like, we need more Michael B. Jordan in our comic book movies, and not as the Human Torch.
I mean, T'Challa's character, like, T'Challa is fighting him, and T'Challa kill, like, T'Challa doesn't necessarily kill him, right? Like, he's sitting there with him. He takes him to see the sunset because, like, this is T'Challa's empathy for him, his compassion, like, knowing that this is the type of leader he wants to be. And Killmonger makes the decision to do it himself because he's like, I'm not going to do anything else. But this is also the part where I think, well, if your main goal was actually to affect change and help these Black communities across the globe, why do you choose that over working with somebody who is actually showing that he's given you a branch to have that moment? Like, for me, I think that Killmonger was like, the cause was right, but I don't necessarily think that Killmonger bought into that cause. I think he was first. His revenge was first, like any villain's was first. But what complicated it was that he understood that he was a product of the system and he wanted to burn that system. And that's what made it a complex situation, because he wasn't necessarily wrong.
Right. Right. He wanted to do things his way. He wanted to be in power. He wanted to like use his empower to do the right thing. Like, oh yeah, I'm gonna still do it right, but yo, I'm about to take this throne first. You know what I mean? Like, I'm gonna send all these people over, you know, to the these war dogs out here, and they take over the world first, and I'm gonna do it my way. You know, but so he was just like, yeah, he was a bad guy through and through, but with some good intentions, but it got skewed over. Like, yeah, I think like all the stuff he was going through, he lost his way over the years. Even when he goes to the Jalia, he's trapped in his apartment. God, that was such good imagery. Like, when you look outside the window, the Panther, past Black Panthers are out there. But he doesn't go to them. He goes to his father, and his father, who is also part of the line, is also trapped in the building with him. You know what I mean? And he mentions Wakanda being lost, and that's why they can't find us, when it's really them that was lost. You know what I mean? They were doing things the wrong way. And like, I just thought that was such like just such good symbolism, like that apartment, when he went to the ancestral plane.
Yeah.
Oh, and the final line with of Killmonger. where he says, you know, he said, I don't want y'all to just lock me up or whatever. And he says, bury me in the ocean with my ancestors because they knew that death was better than living in bondage. That was that was a powerful line.
That's strong.
I just have trouble because I just don't believe everything he was saying. Because kind of like you said, he was a bad guy. And like basically all the way we got up to this point, none of his actions seemed to justify or seem anything of what he was trying to, I guess, say.
Like he was all rhetoric.
Yes, per se. Or sell this idea of like, you know, because even when he's talking about when he's taking over the throne, we're going to, you know, there's all these people out there and you guys have done nothing. And it was like, you basically went to MIT and excelled thing and you did nothing other than kill people. And then you literally killed your own girlfriend with no hesitation.
You're wrong, though.
You that's literally helped Claw, who was the person that they hated the most for a while before he killed him. But it was just like, it didn't seem like any of his actions
lined up with anything. He's more of like a, you know, the ends justify like the means kind of thing. Like he knew like the best way to do what he wanted to do was to become King of Wakanda. Cause that's like where all the resources are at. Like could he have done something better with like his like MIT degree? Probably. Was it as good as like having Wakanda technology at your control to basically go take over the world? Probably not.
And see, I think that's where the difference is. Like what you just said, he wants to take over the world. I don't think he necessarily wants to help people first.
Like even the way he treated
the people. He wants to help the 2 million people or the 2 billion people he was talking about. Like that's who he wants to help.
Well, I don't even think he wants to help. Like I wouldn't even say that. Like, I don't know. I think for him, I think it was something that he hated because of what it did to him. And I think that he just doesn't care about anybody. Like, I see him as somebody who does not care. Like, he does not have the empathy to care for that. Because guess what? Putting fucking sonic cannons in the hands of people who have never used a sonic cannon before. Like, it's not just, you know, the people that are being the oppressors that are going to die here.
Well, I mean, even besides that, the thing I look at is literally when the one time he has to show empathy besides, you know, like helping other people, he shoots her right in the head.
Yeah.
I mean, again, it goes back to the ends. I mean, he knows he has to shoot her to be able to go do what he wants to do. Like,
I don't know.
That was just the one person you cared about and you shot her without hesitation. There was literally no hesitation.
Cares more. I would imagine he probably cares more about the cause than do whatever. Like, Okaya would have stabbed her ex-husband. Like,
that's true.
For the cause.
I think, well, I guess even the people in Wakanda, he didn't seem to care about them either.
No, so but I'm just saying, like, to say like he doesn't care takes away from like everything he does in the movie and it makes the movie lesser. So like either you think that he's like legit and he cares about the cause, but he just wants to do it in a really messed up way, or he's like lying through his teeth and that kind of like takes away from the movie for me.
Like, yeah, I mean, it takes away from the movie. I guess to me, like I said, when I was watching it, that's what I felt like I saw because of the actions that happened.
I don't think he was lying. I think it was second. Like, I think he believed in the cause. I just think it was second to what he wanted. Like, he wanted vengeance first, and then he wanted the cause.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
He believed in it, and it was really fucking powerful.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's one of the reasons why he's a great villain, because he wasn't wrong. Like, that is why it impacts T'Challa, because he's like, you are not wrong. Like, we have to do something. Like, so I don't want to take that away from it at all. And I don't want it to seem like it isn't a just cause, because it was a just cause. It just wasn't just means. I just think for him, it was vengeance first and then other people.
Right.
I think he's just layered. Like, okay, he wants to do these things to help people, but at the same time, like, he's like choking women and like shooting them in the head and stuff. Like, come on, dude. Like, okay, you want to help people, but are you really that good? Like, are you really the guy that we should put in charge of helping people? Like, come on.
Yeah.
And I guess it's kind of my problem, because like I said, all the actions of like, we're just killing people along the way. And it's just like, so who are you actually helping at? Who have you actually helped at this point?
I think that's what makes him a villain.
He's not going to go shake old lady's hands because baby's on the head.
Well, I actually think that's one of the things that like now, like I've sat and kind of thought about it too, is like one of the things that I'm starting to realize is like, I can't necessarily equate him not caring about Wakanda to other people just because he does, he genuinely does not care about Wakanda. He just wanted to rule it. If he cared about Wakanda, he, like, by him burning the heart-shaped herb, he's ensured that a Wakanda doesn't succeed after him. Like, he is Wakanda. This is done.
Yeah. He put himself first.
Yeah. And so I guess for me, like, that's what I see kind of going outside. I mean, we obviously don't, like, we don't have any interactions of him living that life or of him interacting with those communities, of him, you know, feeling that. We don't have that. We just have the after effects, which isn't a problem because I think he is probably one of the best, like, him and Vulture are the top two villains in the Marvel Universe for me, like, hands down. They're complicated. They have reasons for doing what they're doing, and they're not wrong. Mm-hmm. And that's what makes them so great. And I think the, like, what Killmonger steps up is not only is his cause reasonable, but he actually impacts the hero to do something. And that's what a good villain does. A good villain teaches the hero from their actions.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Yeah. Also, can we talk about the fact that we finally got a Marvel movie where somebody, or we got a Marvel movie where somebody's neck was snapped on screen?
Mm. By the guy wanting to help everybody.
Yeah. That happened.
Well, I don't mean it negatively. Like, I mean it like we have a whole bunch of people who, you know, really get on Marvel movies for not showing a whole bunch of stuff. And I do think Civil War kind of started showing more and more things. Cause a dude gets blown up in a contained ball in Civil War. like that happens. But here you actually get to see a really powerful moment between Okoye and that other member of the Dora Milaje, where, like, she's ready to die for Wakanda and she understands what's about to happen. And, like, part of me is like, it's a Marvel movie. They're not going to, oh crap. He just snapped her neck.
Mm.
Like, I didn't expect that. And it was really powerful because then when he started fighting Shuri, I was like, oh my God, are they going to kill Shuri? And I was scared.
Shuri had some great moments of coming to, of, like, she's powerful in her domain. Like, you see her, like, you know, when she's doing the technology stuff. And then when she steps a little bit out of it, like, she's in actual combat, like, sure, she can fight and stuff like that. But you can see, like, the childlike fear in her face. When
her gun stops working?
Like, I mean, even before it starts working, even when she realizes, oh, snap, like, he just blew all the Dora Milaje off. It's up to me to stop this dude now. And she, like, goes over to fight him. Like, it was just like, you know. You could see it. You could see she has so much depth and range to her character. She's excellent. I mean, the Tisha Wright is an excellent actress.
Oh yeah, she's amazing. So then you end up having their giant battle. We already talked about what ends with them. So I guess just to kind of wrap up. I mean, I think we've talked. Oh, the rhinos. There are rhinos. Wakabi calls in an army of armored rhinos. And they're so cute, but I acknowledge they're maybe not the best done CGI in existence. But they are cute. And it looks Okoye's face.
I could have done without the rhinos.
Nah, you need the rhinos, though. Come on.
They're just not done.
Have you ever seen armored rhinos riding it? No. That has to happen.
It could have been done better. I mean, like... Do you really, like, look at that rhino and you're like, damn, that's a good CGI rhino?
I mean, honestly, well, so I'm a little bit less
So you're talking to two people that don't care about CGI.
Here's the thing, but, like, me and CGI, like, I honestly think a lot of CGI of this day and age is really freaking good. I mean, so I hear a lot of people, like, people say what they don't like about a movie. They're like, and one of the first things they say is, well, the CGI was bad. And I'm like, oh, no, not that it was bad. I'm sorry. There is bad CGI. I don't like bad CGI. But they'll say there was too much CGI. And I'm like, well, if it's good, what does it matter?
No. I mean, I don't think we're making that. I mean, we love Thor Ragnarok. That entire thing is CGI.
I don't have a problem with CGI. I'm just saying, like, this is Marvel. Like, you're going to tell me that these dudes didn't have enough money to make dope-looking rhinos? That's my problem, because, like, we have... really, really good CGI in this universe. And then they give us, like, rhinos just to give us rhinos.
It wasn't corn, so I'm good with the rhinos.
Right, it's just, I don't know. I just think it could have been done better. And, like, yeah. If you don't think it could have been done better, you just lying. Like, they could have done better there.
I love the rhinos.
I thought it looked good. I honestly don't know what. Like, because some of the things that people complain about CGI, or as far as, like, the way it looks, like, to me, something CGI that looks bad is, like, you know, you remember in Justice League, the entire movie? But specifically, there's these, like, the little liquid-looking things, like, near the end of the movies that are, like, sprouting up and around and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
So those look really bad to me, right?
But then, like, that was the only thing that you saw that was bad?
No, don't get me wrong. There's other things that you were just kind of like, okay, that could have been done better. But those, like, that was, like, wow, like, eye-burning bad. And then there's, like, the rhinos. You know, I'm like, well, the rhinos look like rhinos. I mean,
the rhinos look fine to me.
They look, I mean, to me, they just look like rhinos. I don't know.
Considering some of the stuff in Justice League and some of the stuff in The Last Jedi, I thought the rhinos were
great. We're talking about what movies. We're talking, I mean, Last Jedi CGI isn't that bad. Like,
have you seen AT-AT? That is, like, one of the worst scenes ever.
Oh, those look more real than the rhinos do. Like, I believe those more than I believe the rhinos. But even like,
okay, I don't agree there. But I do agree that the rhinos are kind of bad. But I also really love rhinos, and so they're so cute.
In the first trial fight, like when they're panning up like the mountain to show all of like the people that are there, that doesn't look nearly as good. Like, I think as it should. Like, you can tell like those are just like CGI people waving.
Well, the first three stories of that was actual people.
No, but I'm saying, like, the farther up it goes, like, the more you're like, oh, okay, like, they're just, like, layering this now instead of, like, making it look better. I don't know. I just think they could have done.
I think y'all work in CGI art or something, because I didn't even see that.
Yeah, I didn't.
I didn't see that at all.
No, I really did. And this isn't, like, this is obviously, like, this is something that's super nitpicky. Like, this is kind of, like, finding, like, the imperfections in, like, a pretty damn good movie. But I just expected just, like, a little bit more, like.
Yeah,
just a little bit. Especially after, I know Thor Ragnarok and this movie aren't the same, but like the same people making it. Like you can literally get those people and give me like CGI Hulk and give me that, but in rhino form.
Well, CGI Hulk was good, but there was one scene in Thor Ragnarok. There was one scene in Thor Ragnarok that I was kind of cringing just a little bit, and it's like the slow motion scene where Thor is flying on the bridge. And he's flying at Hela, or is it Hela? I think it was Hela. It's in slow motion, and you guys, the electricity cracking.
You better not call out that scene, Ritz. That's amazing.
The scene was cool, but like in slow motion like that, because you're seeing the CGI in slow motion, and it looked a little cheesy. I was like, and I'm a person who usually doesn't see anything wrong with CGI, and I was looking at that, and I noticed that, you know. It wasn't bad. I just noticed it.
Yeah.
You
know what I mean? Yeah, that's my point. Like, it's not bad. Like you, it's just like noticeably like takes me out of the movie for like half a second. I'm like, well,
yeah.
Is that the best that Disney has to offer? I don't.
Which I mean, I think overall, I think we should come to an end here. I'm gonna say like, so overall, I think we've all talked pretty damn positive about this movie. And we've obviously highlighted some of each of our individual like issues with it. But I think overall, I think that it stands up pretty strong. So where do you all rate this in, I guess, not all Marvel movies, because we're at 18 now and we're going to be here all day if we're ranking them, but just like amongst the top five Marvel movies for you? Like, or I guess, where does this fall in your ranking, I guess, assuming it's not your top five?
For me, I'll go first. Like, after my first watch, I'm not really sure, like, because on the way home, like, I was trying to like peg it. Just because like it's really, really good, but I didn't get like the same feels that I got like say after I watched like Civil War, or like I didn't want to like, or like a Thor Ragnarok or something like that, just because I felt different walking out of Black Panther. I think it's a top 10 movie for me in terms of like the Marvel Universe. I think it's second to Iron Man in terms of like solo, like you know, kind of intro-ish kind of movies. In my opinion, but it's in my top 10. I don't know where, but I don't think it's in my top five. But after one watch, like, who knows? Maybe after this conversation, I'll go back and I'll see stuff that I like more. But just out of the gate, I'd say top 10 for me.
I'm expecting Adrian to go watch it a second time and put a tweet storm like, this number one.
No, that's definitely not. I don't see anything beating Logan or Civil War for me unless Infinity War is like.
Well, Logan's not MCU. So
I'm talking about just comic book movies in general. Yeah. Like, And they're 21Bs. Like, I can't.
I don't compare Logan to anything. I'm like, that's his own separate movie in his own separate thing. Because like, fucking.
Yeah. And I think it's worth having like the conversation, like not now, obviously, because we're like way over time. But like, do we start separating, you know, these ensemble like Avengers movies, like Guardians of the Galaxy movies, from like a Black Panther or a Black Widow or an Iron Man, just because they're so different in movies now?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't. And that's where my problem is in the kind of ranking it. But
that makes sense. Like, would it be smarter to say, hey, these are the ensemble films, let's put them in one area and then the solos in another, because they're all doing different things.
Yeah, exactly.
Matt?
Oh, I was thinking you're gonna go Ritz.
Oh, Ritz.
Oh, yeah. Look, excellent plot. Creative technology. We didn't even talk about the technology in the movie. Freaking insane.
Come on, man. I know. You know where Tony is getting his Infinity War suit.
Like, basically vibranium lace sand sculpture models. Like, come on, dude. Like, the very beginning of the movie. Great action scenes, amazing action scenes, great actors, great cast. Almost every actor was freaking on point. All the way from freaking Ross to Ramonda to everybody. So much. I mean, we didn't even scratch the surface of symbolism in the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Layered, multi-layered characters, great villain, great hero, very little flaws. Like, all the flaws we're talking about were super nitpicky. Think about the other Marvel movies and the other things you could point out that are flawed in the movies. Honestly, I'm very, very close between this and the first Avengers movie, and kind of Civil War too, because obviously those are and Winter Soldier. Those are like all very, very close. Those are all very close, but like honestly,
if I'm really
thinking about the different flaws I see in the different movies, versus character arc, versus villain, versus creativity, versus symbolism, like Black Panther's number one, like just hands down, like barely any flaws in this movie.
Yeah.
So, alternate carbon would be my number one, but
do you want to explain why you're saying that?
So I literally binged this entire thing and slept for 2 hours and then went to work and then came home and slept for like an hour and then went and watched Black Panther and then came home and finished the series and then slept for another like 2 hours. So I was kind of a little delusional by this whole thing. So everything kind of started to blend. So it was kind of hard thing. But as far as Marvel movies, as far as production and everything that like Rich was saying, I thought it was very well done compared to a lot of the other movies. Like even just like taken away, like just the way the scenery, scenes, the like Hall of Wakanda, the way they showed, the technology they showed was probably like top notch compared to like even some of the other stuff. It's easily probably a top five movie for me, but I'm kind of getting to the point with everybody else. There's just so many that it's kind of like, what do I feel like I'm in the mood for now that I like?
Yeah, Marvel's almost really good at making these goddamn movies, and it's getting real hard.
Because even like Rich was talking about, even the ones that Rich was talking about, those are your like all your team up movies that he was pretty much comparing them to.
Yeah.
They weren't even like solo movies.
That shows how Black Panther is so good too.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It was like, yeah.
Solo. Like the other ones, like really, like, okay, so the Avengers. I think about the Avengers. The Avengers was the first, like, nobody's ever done that before. The Avengers, the first one. Like, come on, dude. How do you even do it? And then it was so well done. But then when I'm thinking about Doug, and then, yo, Afrofuturism, dog. There has name another Afrofuturistic movie like this. Like, there are none. There literally are none. You don't see Black women kicking that much behind in a movie ever. Like, I mean, so that's a little bit biased because of my Blackness or whatever. But I don't care. Like, come on, dog.
No, yeah, and that's my point, right? It's like a feels thing. Like, I can never argue like how that movie makes you feel. Of course, you're gonna put that movie as number one. Like, this is like a movie that. Not as much as Last Jedi. I'm not going to say that. But, like, I'm never going to judge anyone for putting this movie as number one in their top comic book movies ever because it's really good and it makes people feel some kind of way. Like,
it means something to people. Like, it's more than just a movie to people. Like, I'm thinking, like,
this movie matters.
Exactly. Like, I'm just thinking, like, if we get an America Chavez movie or we get like, a visibly brown, like, a Latina who can't have her Latinidad erased from people. Like, I feel that.
Yeah. So well done. Like and with the same quality. Because Ryan Coogler is a beast. Like this is he's two beast. All right. That's all I gotta say. He's two beast. The cultural vibes are there. And then on top of that, the movie itself, if like you take all the Afro, everything I just said out of it, it's still next to Winter Soldier. And you know what I'm saying? Because that's what I'm saying. I'm a little bit biased because of that. But like, if I'm being honest and I'm looking for like actual movie analysis flaws, there are barely any.
Well, that's what I was trying to say with like the scenery, the production and everything of this movie in general. Right. Like, I just thought it was very well made and very well done. Speaking of which, by the way, the one thing that is probably the best thing that I saw, which probably nobody else does, and I'm sure it has to do with the technology, the fact that Wakanda still has grass and trees all within their high city. There's not really any pollution or anything else. Mm-hmm. If people walk, I don't know if anybody saw, but if you actually have no sidewalks and it's literally just grass growing, and nature goes within the city.
That's awesome.
That's like, I don't know why more cities haven't decided to do this, but we need
concrete. Wakanda is perfect.
Well, we need concrete for every damn thing, but still, it was literally the grass grows and the trees grow within buildings or on the side of the buildings or even on the buildings, mm-hmm. which is really nice to watch. I don't know if I cared or looked at that, but still.
No, that's actually a really good point because it shows that they're balancing technology and nature, which nobody does.
But yeah, we didn't even talk about all the drawings on all the like this high tech device that has.
And
we can
do a science of Marvel. We need to do a science of Marvel episode.
Oh my goodness, that would be like
only if Fritz comes back.
Yeah.
Man, I would totally put it probably in my top five. I really enjoyed Thor Ragnarok really a lot. And then obviously Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously Avengers, but besides that, really. I still think Iron Man. We're gonna watch Iron Man for everybody listening. We are watching and reviewing Iron Man 1 for Patreon, but we're gonna watch that. And I'm gonna really trust that one because everybody seems to be sleeping on this movie on how important and how probably good this movie was. And I better hold up. Damn it, I'm gonna be pissed what I just said. But still,
oh, the first Iron Man?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, it was excellent.
Oh, I know. But like, I literally see people going, "If you have to give somebody 5 movies to introduce them to the MCU, what do you get?" And I never saw Iron Man on one single list. And it was like the most disappointing, disrespectful thing ever. Because like without Iron Man, this we don't even get a Black Panther. We don't get an Avengers or anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Especially how well that movie was done. But anyways.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens. But I'm hoping it holds up from what I remember. I've seen the movie like 8 times, but yes.
Yeah, so for me, it's top 5 for me. I don't know where. Only because, and again, like Adrian said, like I'm not going to knock anybody for having this as their number one because I understand that it gave you feelings because I'm imagining, like, I know what I felt when I saw Diego Luna in Star Wars and stuff. Like, I understand that, so I'm never going to knock you for it. But for me, like, my most intense feelings came in Civil War, and so Civil War is number one for me, like, hands down. Then Avengers, and then it's Black Panther or Iron Man, and I have to rewatch Iron Man to make sure that Iron Man is still there for me. And then Winter Soldier, and that's my top 5. But I just don't know where to put Black Panther with Iron Man, or even if Iron Man even stays this high on my list. So we'll see.
By default, Iron Man should always stay this high on your list.
Yeah, started it all.
It's very difficult. There's some very good movies in the MCU.
I know. This is a good problem to have as a comic fan.
We got
to
start like separating like the team movies. Okay, we can't count team movies. Okay, so
yeah, that's what I was saying.
Like more than 3 people in it.
Exactly. And Civil War, like, and Captain America Civil War is like a Captain America movie, but that's a goddamn team-up movie. And
it's an Avengers movie. It's an
Avengers movie, dude.
That's Avengers 2.0 or 2.5. That doesn't count. Yeah. But yeah, you're right. We need to start separating them because it's too hard to make these decisions. I don't like it. Stop making me choose.
So I'm hearing from the table, from everybody here, that this was a great movie.
Oh, yeah.
Aside from Killmonger's hair. But yes.
His hipster hair.
Sorry, I can't do the hair. It bugs me. And people keep showing me pictures. I see it all the time. I'm like, oh.
It's okay. It's counteracted by Nakia's hair when she goes to Korea.
Oh, it's so good. No, you know what? You know what beats out all of that? Okoye's tattooed head.
I was going to say Ramonda.
Oh, okay. Ramonda can take that spot. Yeah. Yeah. Shuri is amazing, too.
Yeah, that's cool. Wrap it up.
Okay, sorry. Yeah.
Good talking.
So, as we say,
we literally just talked about all of that.
I know. I was like, come on. We could have.
Okay. So, as we say on the podcast, if all 3 of us agree, 4 with Ritz here, it's a fact. It's a fact that Black Panther is an amazing movie. Go see it. Help it smash this box office even more wide open. I don't even know if it
you can beat the blue people.
The blue people. Oh, Avatar! Yeah, that's right.
Actually, just beat all the stupid Star Wars movies. So the Star Wars.
I thought you were talking about the DC people.
They already beat those blue people.
It already made more money in its first weekend than Justice League did its entire run. So,
oh wow.
Or seven day run.
And they had a holiday.
Okay, so Ritz, how would you like to go out? Never mind. We got to do our God. I'm sorry. You'll tell me wrap it up. It's throwing me off. Okay,
quit talking.
I can't. Ritz, why don't you tell everybody where to find you, how to get in contact with you, and where to listen to your podcast, which I totally forgot to plug at the beginning.
It's all good. Yeah, you guys can find me at fourthwall.net. That's ivwall.net. My podcast is Wakanda Forever, formerly known as Wakanda for Life podcast. You can also find me at doyouevencomicbook.com. I run that site. With obviously the hashtag Do You Even Comic Book People, so follow the hashtag, visit the site, and yeah.
Why'd you change the name of your podcast?
We'll talk about that later.
Can't be just coming in here changing things, not explaining.
I gotta update the guest information now. Damn it, Ritz.
That's fine.
I will include all that in the show notes. Make sure you show him and his podcast for show him and his podcast some love. As always, you can find the podcast at But Why Though PC on Twitter and on Facebook, facebook.com/ButWhyThoughPC. Make sure you jump in on this conversation. Did you like Black Panther? Did you love it? Did we miss stuff? I know we did. Jump in on the conversation. Talk to us. And you can find me at Oh My Myth Randier on Twitter and Instagram. Adrian?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at SuperReese93, SuperReuiz93.
Matt?
And you can find me on the Twitter at ThatM18, DATTM18.
And now, Ritz, what would you like to go out with?
Shoot. Yeah, y'all got to go out with, like, you guys have the soundtrack music from Black Panther? Yeah, go out with, like, the opening song that they started with when they were flying over the field.
We didn't even talk about the music.
Oh, it was amazing. Oh, God. It was amazing.